Hey everyone, welcome to the Emotional Man Podcast, where we are discovering how business leaders are building successful families. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Emotional Man Weekly Podcast. Today, it is our treat, or my treat, to introduce you to Terry Tucker. He's been a NCAA Division I basketball player, a Citadel cadet. We won't hold that against him. I was a ROTC guy myself. An undercover narcotics investigator, a SWAT team hostage negotiator, and a high school basketball coach, a business owner, and most recently, a cancer warrior. Terry and his wife have lived all over the United States and currently reside in Colorado with their daughter and their Wheaton Terrier, Maddie. Now, back in 2019, Terry started a website, Motivational Check, to help others find and lead uncommon and extraordinary lives, which I would argue Terry has experienced. And so that's what we kind of want to explore and dive into today. So welcome to the show, Terry.
Thanks for having me. And I'm really looking forward to tackling this topic with you today.
Thank you so much. And Terry's really kind of, we're going to be doing a mini series as we've started doing. So we're going to, our conversation will cross over into three different episodes. And what we'll be exploring today is a problem that I've often seen with some of my clients that we've coached and just, you know, entrepreneurs in general. And that is, they're in a lot of pain, whether they're in struggling relationships, they're fighting with their kids, they're fighting with their wives, or they're just overwhelmed by all the demands that they see on their time. That's, you know, they're struggling to provide. They feel like they need to be, you know, participating in the community, whether that's a church congregation or, you know, charity efforts. But then their wife wants a piece of them and their kids want a piece of them. And maybe they like to relax a little, but they're just so overwhelmed and they're just ready to give up. They're not really sure how to unpack all this. So it's better just kind of keep the status quo. And so, Terry, as you've grown up, you know, you come from a family and you know, we've talked a little bit in the past about your father and his expectations for you. And of course, just the path that you've traveled. Have you ever experienced this kind of sense of overwhelm by everything that's around you? And so let's start there. Have you ever experienced that kind of overwhelm as a business owner or just as a father?
Yes. I go back to my police days, and I was working the night shift. So I was working 11 at night till 7 o'clock in the morning. This was in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Cincinnati did not have night court. So if you were active, which my partner and I were incredibly active, then, you know, you get off work at 7 o'clock, go grab a bagel, you go to court at 9 o'clock. And depending on when you get out, now you've got to go home and try to get some sleep. But our daughter, my wife and I have one child, a daughter. She was always the focus. She was always, we'll do whatever we have to do in our professional lives to make sure that we provide for her, that we're there for her, that she never feels alone or abandoned or anything like that. So my wife would take our daughter to work, take our daughter to school on her way to work. And then I would pick her up, you know, 3 o'clock when she got out of class. So depending on what time I got out of court, there was a very good chance that, you know, I'm going on a couple hours of sleep. I would get her, I would get home, we would do homework, piano, all that kind of stuff. My wife would come home, I would try to lay down for an hour or two. But there were many nights that I would go to work on 2 or 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and I carried a gun for a living. And I had to make decisions that, you know, a lot of us don't have to make in terms of life and death situations with people. And I never wanted to shortchange our daughter, but at the same time, I knew I was kind of playing Russian roulette with the fact that, boy, if I have to make a split second decision here, am I going to be at my best to do that? And in all honesty, on many occasions, the answer to that question was no, I wasn't. But that's what we did.
What was that like for your family? Because obviously, there's the physical demands of that, physical fatigue, and then the mental fatigue. And let's be honest, being in any kind of relationship, how compatible you are, there's still issues. You know, you're two different people, two different cultures. So what were some of the kind of relationship issues you had to work through during that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my wife worked days, I work nights. That's why we only have one child. You can do the math, you know, I mean, when you don't see each other. But my wife was a tremendous support to me. And when we married, I was in hospital administration. So I was a suit and tie, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday kind of guy. We get married. We moved to Santa Barbara, California. My grandfather was a Chicago police officer. I always wanted to follow in his footsteps. And I saw a circular that came in the mail. And it had an advertisement for Santa Barbara City College. You take this class, you can apply to be a reserve police officer at any agency within the state of California. And so that night at dinner, this was before our daughter was born, I'm like, look, I'd like to do this. Will you support me on this? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Go take the course. See what happens. See if you like it. And then I did like it. And Santa Barbara retained me as a reserve police officer. And my wife used to say, I would work all week, my regular job. I was a customer service manager for an academic publishing company when we lived in California. And I would come home Friday night, put on my uniform, go to roll call, work all night, and then come home Saturday morning. And she said, you were exhausted, but you had this big smile on your face. And I knew that you kind of found your purpose. And so when our daughter was born and we moved back to the Midwest where we're both from, I said, look, I want to do this full time. We were in Cincinnati. I said, I want to go through the police academy. I want to do that full time. And she supported me in that. The other thing I did is I was on SWAT. And at the time, we carried pagers. We were not a full-time SWAT team. And Seth, I'll tell you, she would tell you, she was sitting here every Sunday night. You know, she'd make this great dinner for my daughter and I, and we'd sit down as a family and we'd be having our meal and the pager would go off. And she would look at me like, are you serious? Like, I got to go. And she supported me with that. And that was a little bit of a contention, especially those Sunday dinners. I mean, we tried to eat together as a family, but Sunday dinners were special. They were our time. They were time to just be together as a family and not hurry up, rush up because somebody's got to go to a game or whatever it ended up being. Sundays were family days. And when that pager went off, I just cringed when it went off. It was just like, ah, because I knew I had to go. And I didn't go on the SWAT without the commitment of her. I'm like, look, you know, this might mean some times when we get called away, might get called away Christmas Eve. You might get called away, you know, on New Year's Eve, things like that. Are you okay with this? And she said, yes. And so we supported each other. And then, so I did that for almost 10 years in Cincinnati. And then she lost her job and she was the primary breadwinner in our family. So she couldn't find a job in Cincinnati. She found one in Houston. And so I gave up what I loved, my law enforcement career, because I loved my family absolutely positively more. And I followed her to Houston. And so we've had these kind of give and takes through actually it was 30 years yesterday that we were married. So through this 30-year relationship of, I will support you. You will support me. We will ultimately come together to support and be there for our daughter. So family. And I learned that from my parents. I mean, I have two brothers. We all were athletes. We all played sports in college. And my parents taught us the value of loving each other, caring for each other and supporting each other. And I like to think that my wife and I pass that on to our daughter as well.
Now, was there any conversations about whether or not you should stop doing SWAT or, you know, hey, this is a real strain on our family. Let's maybe get you a different job.
No, it was something that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to be in law enforcement. As I said, my grandfather was a Chicago police officer from 1924 to 1954. And was actually shot in the line of duty with his own gun. It was not a serious injury. He was shot in the ankle. This was 1933. And my dad was 1 year old at the time. And he always used to remember the stories my grandmother told of that knock on the door of, Mrs. Tucker, grab your son, come with us. Your husband's been shot. So when I expressed an interest in following my grandfather's footsteps, it started with my father. It was like, absolutely not. You're going to college. You're going to major in business. You're going to get out, get a great job, get married, have 2.4 kids to live happily ever after. But that's what my dad wanted me to do. That's not what I felt my purpose, my mission, my why in life was. And my dad was dying of cancer when I graduated from college. And so I had really the first major life decision to say, well, I could say, you know, yeah, Dad, I know you're dying, but I'm going to go off and blaze my own trail. Or out of love and respect for you, I will do what you want me to do. So my first two jobs were in business because that's what my dad wanted me to do. And I sort of joke, I did what every good son did. I waited until my father passed away, and then I followed my own dreams. And Zeph, I don't mean to sound conceited with this, but one of the things that I am most proud of that I've done in my life is that I never let my purpose die. I knew I wanted to be a policeman. I was a 37-year-old rookie police officer, which by most accounts is pretty old to be getting into that line of work. But it was always there. It was not something that I was willing to give up on or to quit on. It just took me a little bit longer to get to that point in my life.
So how did you balance this purpose that you found, your why, in being a police officer with your role as a husband and father? Because that's one of the most demanding things that entrepreneurs, business owners, or, you know, service members, whether that's in the police forces, military forces, oftentimes we feel called to fulfill this purpose, to serve our community in this specific way. But we also have this burden to provide for our families and, you know, serve our spouse and serve our children. So what did it look like for you and your spouse, for you and your wife, to find that balance? What did that communication look like? Because it seems like you made it work.
We did. And I think it was because we talked about it. I mean, my family was my sanctuary. You know, the things you see in law enforcement, you really shouldn't see. You see the ugliness, you see the hopelessness and the helplessness and people dying and young people dying and things like that. And there's a tendency, I mean, there's certainly a higher rate in terms of a national average among police officers for alcohol abuse, drug abuse, divorce, having affairs, all that kind of stuff, because of what you see. And there were a lot of times where it's like, hey, the shift's over, come on, we're going out to get a drink. And I love the people I worked with. I would lay down my life for those people, but I never did that. I never said, sure, I'll go out to the bar with you and have a drink. I was like, no, I'm going home, because that was my sanctuary. That was where I felt safe. Those were the people that gave me love and support. So it was really a lot of communicating with each other, my wife and I. I mean, she traveled for her job, but we would sit down. It's like, okay, you know, next week I've got to go, you know, to San Diego. Or okay, I'll take, you know, a couple of days off. So I'll be here with our daughter. And that way I can get her to school. I can get her home and all that stuff. So we would coordinate our schedules. Now, obviously, with SWAT, you know, a call-up wasn't scheduled. Those things, you know, were usually unplanned. But she never asked me to quit. She never asked me to give it up. And I never asked her to stop traveling or doing anything like that. It was like, you love what you do. I love what I do. But I love our family more. I've always said the three biggest things in my life, especially right now, are the three F's, which are faith, family, and friends. You know, my faith in God, my family, and the people that I hold close to me who are not related to me. Those are absolutely the most important things in my life. And again, going back to my parents, our parents taught us that. Our parents not only taught us that, they modeled that. They were always there for us. And my dad traveled a lot. And I've said this to my mom a couple times. I always felt that my mom was scared when my dad was gone, because this was a time before cell phones and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've got three boys. I'm trying to get them practices and games. I'm trying to wash their uniforms. I'm trying to go to the store. I'm trying to make a dinner. I'm trying to do all these things. And I don't have the support because my husband's traveling. My dad has traveled 3, 4, 5 days a week. And I always felt my mom was afraid when dad was gone. It was And I feel bad about that now, you know, that there's nothing I could have done about it as a kid, but I just felt bad about it. But my parents made it work. And I figured, well, if they can make it work, I know my wife and I can.
Now, I want to come back to something you said earlier in what you just said. Because you talked about how the likelihood for divorce, substance abuse was especially high in the police force. And you also see that in the military. But not for you. Now, a lot of times growing up, and this is just in the culture we're in, the marketing message to us is, if you eat this, you'll be happy. Coca-Cola is great. You know, so some of its marketing message is like, hey, open for happiness. Or even today, if you look out on the Amazon trucks, it says, warning, contents may contain happiness. And so we're conditioned to think that food, things will make us happy. We're also conditioned to think, you hear things like, you made me angry, or I don't want to hurt your feelings, where we place how we feel on external things or on people. And we also think to ourselves that I'm in control of other people's emotions. So how did you navigate? Because obviously in this relationship, it doesn't seem like when you were struggling, you were trying to change other people. You weren't trying to change the circumstance. So talk to me about when you've been in pain, whether that's in your relationship, whether that's, you know, whatever difficult time that you were in, why is it that you think you didn't turn to substance abuse to make yourself feel better or to numb how you were feeling versus having this very healthy relationship, you know, this healthy relationship with your spouse?
I think it goes back to knowing and living what your values are. And I think the biggest, I don't think, I know the biggest value for me is to serve. I could have made a whole lot more money other than being a police officer. And I remember back, most of your listeners will remember Fred Rogers, Fred McFeely Rogers, Mr. Rogers on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, educated so many young people, including me, on his television show. And in 2003, when Fred Rogers died, his family was going through his effects and they found his wallet. And inside his wallet was a scrap piece of paper on which Mr. Rogers had written four simple words. Life is for service. And I love that story. And I think, Zep, that so many of us think that we are born empty and that when we get out of school and we kind of get into life, whatever that means for you, that our job then is to fill our empty self up. We've got to get a great education. We've got to get a great job. We've got to make a lot of money, drive the nicest car, live in the nicest house, have the greatest family, et cetera. And we feel that filling ourselves up will somehow make us happy and fulfilled. And what I found is that it's just the opposite. We're not born empty. We're born full. We're born with everything we need to be successful in our life already inside us. We just need to find that and pull it out and use it for our benefit. So instead of thinking that you've got to fill yourself up, maybe look at it as, no, I have to empty myself out. Certainly for the betterment of yourself, but also for the betterment of your family, of your friends, of your community, of your country, et cetera. Because I've seen so many people, my wife has been in the financial services industry for over 40 years, had a mentor on Wall Street. I've seen so many people that you and I would look at and say, boy, that person has it all. But those people tend to be miserable, because they are going after things that they'll never fill themselves up. I want to get the latest iPhone, or I want to drive the latest Mercedes, or there's always one more thing that they think if they get, it will fill them up and it will make them fulfilled and happy. And it just never does. Stuff doesn't matter. What matters is what's in your heart, what's in your mind, and what's in your soul. And if you understand that, then now all of a sudden, being of service to yourself, to your family, to your friends, to your community, makes you more fulfilled. And when you're more fulfilled, when you understand your purpose, when you understand your values, values are those things that aren't going to change. No matter how bad things are, no matter how bad your circumstances are, those are foundations. Those are rock solid things that aren't going to change. And I knew what my values were. And my biggest value was service. And it was service to my family and certainly service to my community as a police officer.
On our next episode, we're going to wrap up the conversation here, but I really want to dive down because a lot of times when we think about the problems that we have, whether it, you know, in relationships, we can often sometimes think, if my wife wasn't so irritating, we'd have a better relationship. If my kids would just clean up the first time, I wouldn't have to yell at them. Or, you know, if I were a better person, then we're more like, you know, I'm not good for my family, you know, so it's best if I just leave. And I want to connect in our next episode, I wanted to connect the dots between having values and these problems, because I think a lot of times we miss that connection. And so we're going to the outside thing to make ourselves feel whole. So in our next episode, I want to talk about how values fill us up. I love this idea that we are born full. What's the connection there? Because I think if we can make that, if we can bridge that gap, this can solve so many problems in our relationships. It helps us balance our lives. And so in our next episode, that is what we'll talk about. We're looking forward to it. Thanks everyone for listening. And we will see you next week on the Emotional Man Weekly Podcast. Thanks so much, Terry.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate being on.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to the Emotional Man Podcast. If you're a business leader whose family is in pain and you're looking for a change in direction, I invite you to join our 8-week family turnaround program, which gives families just like yours the tools and skills you need to reconnect, heal, and lead your family turnaround. You can learn more by clicking on the link in today's show notes and description. We'll see you soon.